This is a coastal story, written and presented by Charlie Connolly. The trains would clatter over the flat, watery landscape towards the sunrise, clouds of steam hanging in the air as the carriages passed beneath. Inside, most of the women slept as best they could, sitting upright, six to a compartment. A few of them laid out in the corridors, daughters with their heads on mother's shoulders, friend asleep against friend. They travelled all night and all the previous day, the clanks, jolts and sways becoming part of their dreams. Every autumn they'd come, from Banff and Bucky, Fraserburgh and Peterhead, Inverness and Kirkcaldy, Stonehaven and Cromarty. The herring lassies, they called them, arriving on specially chartered services that would pull into Great Yarmouth's Vauxhall Station with a screech of metal and a hissing release of steam. The doors of the carriages marked Highland Railway, Great North of Scotland, Caledonian, would open wide, spilling women onto the platform, stretching aching backs and limbs, feeling every vibration in their bones of the previous 16 hours. The platform was already filled with women who'd arrived on earlier trains and were looking out for friends, cousins, mothers or sisters. There was the occasional cap among the woollen hats and shawls, lads from the Scottish herring drifters that followed the shoals south, craning their necks, looking for wives or sweethearts or sisters. There were cries of recognition among the clamour of arrival. Horse-drawn carts would be lined up outside the station in the early years, then lorries, waiting to take the women to their lodgings and returning to pick up their leather travelling trunks, known as kists, filled with their clothing, bedding, toiletries, cutlery, plate, cup and Bible. Most importantly, it also contained their gutting knives, short and sharp, the tool of the trade that brought them so far from home every year. ...3,000, 4,000, even 5,000 would arrive some years, in an annual southern migration that's largely forgotten now. But in their heyday, the whole country knew about the herring lassies. Yarmouth was built on the herring trade. By the 20th century, herring had been fished there for 800 years. The town was even bound by ancient charter to provide the sheriffs of Norwich with 100 herring every year, baked into 24 pasties. The early 20th century was boom time for King Herring, the Silver Darling, they called him. Scottish boats would follow their migration through the seasons, shadowing the fish as they fed in Scotland's North Sea waters, then gravitated south, heading for their breeding grounds off the coast of France. Smith's Knoll, a sandbank 30 miles off the coast of Norfolk, was a favourite spot and provided rich pickings for the fishermen. In 1913, the biggest year on record, more than a billion herring were caught and landed at Yarmouth alone, sparkling in bulging nets as they were hauled aboard the hundreds of drifters out there off the coast of Norfolk. Nearly 750 Scottish boats were based at Yarmouth that year, as well as 250 English ones, all lined up, prow first, side by side in the harbour, beneath the constant shriek of hungry seagulls. At the end of the summer season, with the last of the holidaymakers heading home, Yarmouth's boarding house landladies would strip their rooms of all non-essentials. They'd cover the walls with newspaper or brown paper, protecting their establishments from the fish oil, salt and brine that came with the women at the end of a long day's gutting, cleaning and packing. The rooms would hold twice as many herring lassies as holidaymakers, the women sleeping sometimes three to a bed, or sleeping in shifts at busy times, one climbing into bed as another climbed out of it. This wasn't a glamorous life. These were hardy women, whose remarkable dexterity, born of relentless experience, was indispensable to a lucrative trade. Herring, as a fatty fish, needs to be worked quickly. The women would stand or sit at barrels, using their knives to gut and clean the fish with one flick of the blade. With the sort of bumper catches that were landed in the early 20th century, speed was the crucial thing. And the Scottish women were fast. They could process between 50 and 60 herring every minute. In 1920, there was a proposal to abolish the cheap rail fares the women enjoyed to encourage local women to take up the work instead. The National Fish Trades Association objected on the grounds the Scottish women could split herring like a flash of light. It would take at least a generation for local women to catch up, they said. Once they'd slid their kists under their iron bed frames and the fishing boats began to arrive at the quay, the herring lassies lined up in their thousands, on the quayside or in compounds run by curing companies. Exposed to the elements all day in their thick woolen jerseys and shawls, aprons and rubber boots. They'd start work at 6 in the morning, ready for the boats returning in the dawn light from their overnight drifts on Smith's Knoll, and keep going until 7 at night, or sometimes later if there was a large catch. The sound of their singing would rise above the constant oily swish of their blades. They'd sing traditional Gaelic songs from home, or hymns. As the evenings drew in, they'd work beneath flaming torches, the orange light catching their knives and burnishing the silver skin of the fish. There was no singing by then. They were too exhausted. Just the roar of the flames and the slash of the blades. Nearly all the herring landed at Yarmouth was destined for the export market, Germany or Russia usually. So most of the fish were put into barrels between layers of salt to preserve them. The fisher girls would work in teams of three, two gutters and a packer, sending out an endless stream of sealed barrels destined for Bavaria or the Russian steppe. A few went to smokehouses to be turned into kippers, and a fraction of the catch became the famous Yarmouth bloater, a herring lightly salted, lightly smoked and intended for immediate consumption. But most of the herring lassies' work went far to the south and the east. The salt from the barrels would get into the cuts that inevitably opened on their hands, but still they'd keep working. For bad cuts, they'd chew a piece of bread and put it into the opening to stop the salt from making the pain worse, but still they'd keep working. These women were tough, and you didn't mess with them. They weren't afraid to use the combined power of their specialist skill and sheer numbers. The women went on strike in 1931 when the curers cut their pay by 4 shillings a week. The women won, of course. 5 years later, they marched through Yarmouth in their hundreds, chanting, "We want a shilling a barrel." Some of the women employed in compounds were locked in and told to keep working. First, a hail of herring came sailing over the walls from the strikers. Then they tried to force the gates. Even having hose pipes turned on them didn't stop the charge to release their cistern. They got their shilling a barrel. So strong was their sense of community that the herring lassies have been passed down to us largely as an anonymous mass. Few individual stories were set down, so it's hard to hear their voices now. One exception was in 1933, when 23-year-old Molly Deem from Lerwick in Shetland made the headlines when she showed up for work at Yarmouth in trousers. "I'm not wearing this dress just to be picturesque," said Molly, who'd been a herring lassie since she was 14 years old, "but simply because the breeches give greater freedom in moving about the yards, and generally in doing the different jobs that fall to the lot of the girl fish worker." She said she'd been considering wearing trousers for some time, but took a while to pluck up the courage. "I am being subjected, of course, to a good deal of chaffing by the other girls, but I expected that. Some, I know, are secretly envying the ease with which I am able to undertake our work, and I shouldn't be surprised if others soon follow me." After the Second World War, the British herring industry went into decline. Decades of rampant overfishing saw stocks of the Silver Darlings decline alarmingly. The number of Scottish boats at Yarmouth reduced year by year until 1968, when only five took part in the herring season, and they never came back. All this meant the herring lassie was a thing of the past too. No more trains spilling crowds of women onto the platform. No more weather-beaten faces peering into shop windows, their hands constantly knitting even as they walked the streets. The clack of wooden needles bouncing around the walls, almost in fear that if their hands ever stopped working, they might not start again. There was no more brown paper on boarding house walls, no more Gaelic song, and the slash and swish of the knives on the Norfolk breeze was silenced forever. It was an incredibly hard life. Some of the women worked almost all the year round, starting on the west coast of Scotland and in the Western Isles in the first 3 months of the year, having April at home, then following King Herring south almost until Christmas. The Silver Darlings also supported basket makers, victuallers, net makers and repairers, coopers, rope makers, coal merchants, box makers, ice dealers and haulage drivers. But it was the fisherwomen from Scotland, from teenagers to grandmothers, who became the faces of the industry. They were women of extraordinary stamina and dexterity, a migrant population who got farther from home as the calendar pages turned. At the end of the season, they'd pack up their kists and head for the station in their Sunday best, parcels under their arms, gifts for those left behind at home. No one knows exactly when the last herring lassie left Yarmouth, but the empty streets and quaysides no longer echo with the clack of the knitting needle, the swish of the knife. These queens of the trade must have felt as if it would go on forever. But nothing goes on forever. That was A Coastal Story. I'm Charlie Connolly. You can find my book, Attention All Shipping, A Journey Round the Shipping Forecast, in all the places you'd expect. But in these tricky times, please try and support an independent bookshop if you can. I'm on Twitter, at Charlie Connolly, and there's a Coastal Stories podcast page on Facebook. Just search for the name, and our little fishing boat should appear top of the list. These waves you can hear are old waves. There's currently a fierce easterly blowing off the sea, making it impossible to record some new ones. Sorry about that. Stay safe, though, and stay home.